My guest at this time is Rena Lindewaldsen. She is a special counsel at Liberty Counsel and an associate dean and professor at the Liberty University School of Law. We want to get her reaction today to Monday's ruling from a three-judge panel on the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejecting Virginia's constitutional amendment defining marriage as only the union of one man and one woman. Rena has joined Liberty Counsel in the legal battle over the definition of marriage for many years. And Rena, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
A couple different quotes here in the majority opinion that we certainly want to get your reaction to. The most controversial one we'll get to in a minute. But this quote simply from Judge Henry Floyd: over the decades, the Supreme Court has demonstrated that the right to marry is an expansive liberty interest that may stretch to accommodate changing societal norms. And later they get on to the comparison that they see with this and interracial marriage. But what do you make of that idea that it's an expansive liberty that can be stretched to accommodate changing societal norms?
Well, I think with this decision, you see another example of the courts exercising legislative powers. They actually believe they have the right to make new law, and now they're not even afraid of proclaiming that in their decision. So, yeah, the Supreme Court has made law, and we're going to continue to do that.
Let's look at their kind of summary statement towards the end of this decision. This was not only Judge Floyd, but also Judge Roger Gregory, and it's a little bit lengthy, but a lot of people are talking about this. Civil marriage, they say, is one of the cornerstones of our way of life. It allows individuals to celebrate and publicly declare their intentions to form lifelong partnerships, which provide unparalleled intimacy, companionship, emotional support, and security. The choice of whether and whom to marry is an intensely personal decision that alters the course of an individual's life. Denying same-sex couples this choice prohibits them from participating fully in our society, which is precisely the type of segregation that the 14th Amendment cannot countenance. A couple different things here. First of all, a lot of folks, especially on your side of this debate, are suggesting that this opens the door to any sort of arrangement among consenting adults to be described as marriage. Do you see that as well?
I do see that as a risk. First, you've got the court proclaiming that the right is ever expanding, and then you have this language that adults should be free to choose to love who they want to love. And we already have challenges to the polygamy bans. We have a movement out there that's suggesting that 2, 3, 4, 5 people should be able to come together in the marital union. So this opens that door entirely. And once you've opened the door past one man and one woman, which has historical foundational roots, what's to say the line can't be drawn to allow 2, 3, 4, and 5 people to marry?
And what do you make of the connection to segregation as referenced in that opinion?
Yeah, the movement for same-sex marriage is entirely distinct from the case that took place to allow people of different races to marry. Marriage is about the coming together of one man and one woman. And a ban that prohibits people because of their skin color from marrying has nothing to do with advancing that purpose. In fact, it's racial discrimination. The idea that that's the same as two people of the same sex who don't promote the state's interest in raising children, coming together to build that firm foundation, is entirely distinct from that. And that's why you see a movement now, a coalition of black pastors actually promoting the idea that same-sex marriage movement is not like the civil rights movement of the 1960s.
The third judge in this case, the one who sided with the current definition of marriage in Virginia, was Paul Niemeyer. And he said to stretch Loving's holding, and Loving is the case that legalized interracial marriage, to stretch Loving's holding to say that the right to marry is not limited by gender and sexual orientation is to ignore the inextricable biological link between marriage and procreation that the Supreme Court has always recognized. How strong did you find the Niemeyer defense?
Judge Niemeyer put forward solid arguments to defense of traditional marriage. And one thing I have to point out is back to the majority opinion in response to that, you have in the majority opinion stating that it's wrong for us to have argued that same-sex couples only have sexual relations with same-sex couples. So they're actually saying that same-sex couples can come together in opposite-sex relationships as well, which plays into this procreation argument. But it also undermines their argument that, you know, we're born gay, can't change, and we need the right to marry. And now the majority is proclaiming that they have this free right to engage in sexual relations with people of the same sex or opposite sex. So where is that going to take us?
The courts are seemingly saying, although this decision was pretty broad, but others have specifically talked about how this is an issue for same-sex couples, and they should not be treated differently than heterosexual couples. Most decisions haven't ventured into the area of polygamy and some of these other areas we've been talking about. Is it possible to limit that, or is once the barn door open, it's all situations and all combinations?
Well, I would like to think we could limit it, but from a legal perspective and realistically speaking, once you open the door is open. There simply is no reason to now say that three consenting adults who love each other and want to raise children together shouldn't be allowed to marry once we retreat from the definition of marriage as one man and one woman.
Let's talk about the logistics a little bit about this, Rena. First of all, this is the second appeals court, although it's unclear whether this will get appealed first to the full Fourth Circuit or straight to the Supreme Court. But obviously, there's been a long string of decisions ever since the Windsor decision at the Supreme Court last June that have essentially sided with the cause of same-sex marriage. Do you believe that there is a solid chance for your side to win at the Supreme Court, or is this a fait accompli almost at this point?
Well, obviously, we never can predict what Justice Kennedy is going to decide in a case like this, because I think we all know he's probably the swing vote. And so it depends on the case that comes up, the facts that are presented, and how persuasively we can get him to understand that this is a not only just a traditional historical basis, but there are firm societal reasons why marriage should continue to be defined as one man and one woman. And this isn't like the race discrimination that took place. So it's all a matter of how it's presented and if he's willing to listen to reason.
What do you make of the court's approach to this? One of the things I found fascinating in the Washington Post account of this decision yesterday is that all three of these judges got to this point, at least in part, thanks to a Republican president. The dissenting judge was appointed there by the first President Bush. Judge Floyd was first nominated to the district court by George W. Bush and then elevated to the appeals court by President Obama. And then the second person in favor of this decision was nominated by Clinton and then promoted by George W. Bush. So this kind of takes the partisan angle out of this to some extent. So what do you make of the fact that folks either initially nominated or promoted by Republican or even conservative presidents are part of this?
Well, I think two quick points. One, obviously the vetting process perhaps shouldn't have been what it should have been. But even more importantly, we're talking about a legal education and a judicial system that has been raised on the idea that as judges, we set public policy and we make law. And that transcends political parties, Republican or Democrat. That's a problem that needs to be addressed. Justice Scalia talks about it often, of how lawyers have been trained. And so it's not surprising you see even Republican appointees getting it wrong on what their role is.
In response to yesterday's decision, the Attorney General in North Carolina, a Democrat named Roy Cooper, announced that after the ruling, his office will cease its defense of the state's ban, which just happened in the last couple of years. What do you make of that sort of policy?
I've actually been working on a project right now with regard to the duties of state attorney generals to defend the law, and they simply do not have the authority to refuse to defend the law. They are charged with enforcing the civil laws. The mechanism to repeal laws is through the legislature, to have them declared unconstitutional through the courts, but the people deserve a defense of the laws that were duly enacted.
Rena, we have an election coming up in less than 100 days now. For the most part, Republicans have no interest in talking about this issue, and the party is clearly divided on this right now as they look at the way younger Americans are viewing this issue and just public opinion polls in general. So how vigorous of an issue should this be for conservatives, and why do you think they're not talking about it very much?
I think it's wrong for conservatives to shy away from this issue by avoiding these issues that are at the forefront of the cultural debate right now, societal division that's taking place. We don't distinguish ourselves, if you're conservative, from the other parties. And I think we're trying too hard to sort of meld into a mushy middle, so to speak. And then by doing that, you don't distinguish yourself and set yourself apart for what you truly stand for. So we really can't shy away from this. This is the issue of the day that we have to stand for and fight for. And if we're going to be afraid of it, the consequences for our society, I don't even want to think about where we're going to go.
What's your best guess on the timetable of when this makes it through the system and eventually we get a final decision from the Supreme Court?
Well, we're looking at, I think it'd be too quick to say it's going to happen during the next cycle, which would be by June or July of 2015, but certainly within the next 2 years.
And the sooner it happens, the better for your side? The later it happens, the better, or just too hard to tell?
Right now, you're looking at one state falling at a time. Sadly, a decision by the United States Supreme Court, the states would seem to want to, you know, follow quickly what their decision says. But, you know, but just to comment on that, just because the United States Supreme Court says that marriage has to include one man and one woman, if that's the decision, you know, the states should stand up and stand for the traditional definition of marriage, because the Supreme Court doesn't have the right to force them to alter that definition.
Rena, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Rena Lindewaldson is a special counsel at Liberty Counsel. She's an associate dean and a professor at the Liberty University School of Law. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.